and realize that 80% good enough as a mom, and that their kids actually appreciate that, and they're modeling that for their children, that their children are going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's really hard to believe, I think, in phase one when you're going through it.
Ever feel like you suck at this job? Motherhood, I mean. Have too much anxiety and not enough patience? Too much yelling, not enough play? There's no manual, no village, no guarantees. The stakes are high. We want so badly to get it right. But this is survival mode. We're just trying to make it to bedtime. So if you're full of mom guilt, your temper scares you, you feel like you're screwing everything up, and you're afraid to admit any of those things out loud, this podcast is for you. This is Failing Motherhood. I'm Danielle Bettman, and each week we'll chat with a mom ready to be real, sharing her insecurities, her fears, her failures, and her wins. We do not have it all figured out. That's not the goal. The goal is to remind you, you are the mom your kids need. They need what you have, you are good enough, and you're not alone. I hope you pop in earbuds, somehow sneak away, and get ready to hear some hope from the trenches. You belong here, friend. We're so glad you're here. Hey, it's Danielle. Do you ever feel like you're failing motherhood? Then you're in the right place, my friend. Do you agree with this mom? She wrote, "I'm so grateful for this podcast. Danielle is such a great example and an awesome resource. If you're a mom feeling the pressure, listen in and get some relief and a reminder that you're doing your best." Yes, you are doing your best. You have never parented in a pandemic before. You have never parented your child at the age they are today. Yet no one knows your child better than you. Give yourself some grace that you're making the best decisions you can with the information you currently have. And when you have new information, you're free to change your mind. If you have taken the time to leave a rating or review for this podcast, I really appreciate it. Did you know that I offer a $17 video mini course on managing your little's big emotions? It only takes 30 minutes and it will flip everything you understand about tantrums on its head. You'll learn exactly what mindsets and perspectives are key in that moment, what to do and what not to do, and how to reduce their frequency in the first place. If you needed this in your life like yesterday, I'll drop the link in the show notes for you to get access ASAP. Don't let another day go by overwhelmed by their big emotions. Level up and carry on, friend. My guest today, Babita Spinelli, is a renowned psychotherapist and divorce expert. I pepper her with questions as she shares so many gems for families considering divorce, going through divorce, or rebuilding their lives, with advice about dating, narcissism, and whether the kids will be all right. Even if you're not married, I promise you this episode will expand your perspective when it comes to navigating healthy relationships. Thanks again for tuning in, friends. I hope this episode serves you and encourages you. You're doing an outstanding job. Welcome to Failing Motherhood. My name is Danielle Bettman, and on today's episode, I'm joined by Babita Spinelli. Babita is an accomplished psychotherapist, collaborative divorce coach, and parent coordinator specializing in divorce therapy, couples therapy, life transition, and career therapy. She's the recipient of the 2019 New York Psychotherapist Award and is frequently featured in the media as a guest expert. At this time, Babita's therapy services and coaching programs are provided virtually throughout the country and internationally through her private practice, Opening the Doors Psychotherapy. Welcome, Babita. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you, Danielle. It's my pleasure.
So you have taken all the classes and you have all the certification and the life experience to share with us today as like our resident divorce expert. And I have all the questions for you, but we'll get to that in a minute. But first, I have to ask you, have you ever felt like you were failing motherhood?
Absolutely.
Okay. Welcome to the club.
Yes.
That's why we're here. You have a son, is that correct?
I do, yes.
How old is he now?
So my son is 18. I can't even believe that he's going to be going off to college.
Oh, wow.
So for anyone that, you know, is in this stage, there's a lot of feelings that come up around this as well.
Yeah, especially with not having closure probably to last school year and things just being so off in the world in general, like that has to add to that stress.
Oh. Absolutely. You know, the no prom, you know, no in-person prom, things of that nature. It's stirred up a lot for parents, for moms.
Yeah. Oh, that's hard. So in what particular season of your motherhood did you really feel like you were failing the most?
You know, I would say probably when my son was, I mean, there's so many stages, to be honest with you. There's always different moments, right?
Right,
but I would say probably around the time of my divorce, probably in his, like, around age of 9, 10.
Mm-hmm.
Around that
time. And why was that hard? I mean, divorce is so easy.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was, exactly. I think we're done, right?
No. Yeah, summed it up.
Yes. You know, it was me going through that life transition and feelings of guilt around the divorce happening and also going through some career transition as well, or really feeling not very fulfilled in my career. So there was a lot taking place and I was also, you know, working. And so there was a lot of feelings that, you know, around failure at that time as I was trying to juggle and balance it all and kept wondering about being good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good enough mom, and then the guilt of the divorce and its impact on him, as well as a lot of big life change all around in terms of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot to handle at once.
Yeah, it really was.
We don't want our kids to be in pain. So
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, of course, as parents, we always want to have this sort of protective bubble, right? And protect our children. And divorce really sort of like forces, like almost like that bubble to kind of be removed and really sort of lean into understanding that, you know, we can't always protect our children. You know, we do the best that we can. But that there's lots of things that they're going to face, you know, and for one child, it may be divorce in the family, for another, maybe something else. But, you know, life gets messy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we don't realize that when we're kids and we're like, oh, the adults have it all together. They got everything figured out and we're in good hands. And then you become an adult and you're like, oh, no, they never knew what they were doing.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting because that's so true because my son does, you know, often say that, like, Mom, I sort of remember somehow having like breakfast and then you getting on the bus with me because we lived in Manhattan at the time to go to school. And then you were going to work and somehow magically then you were there and there was food on the table. And I was like, you had no idea, you know, what just to make that happen. You know, of course, until there were times where I, you know, I might have been like, okay, I can't deal. Had a little meltdown, which is very normal.
Yes, very normal. So what career transition were you going through at that point?
So at that point, I was on Wall Street. I was working as an attorney, and I worked a lot of hours. And I really decided at that same time that I was really unhappy. And so I, you know, saw a therapist and a coach to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had a lot of fears around, am I going to be able to do this transition? Can I do this? I knew that this was something that I knew that I wanted to do something more fulfilling and meaningful. And I also felt like I wanted to make a difference and make an impact. So how can I do that? And so actually it was through my own therapeutic journey that my therapist handed me a bunch of books and said, have you thought about being a therapist? So I literally, you know, went back to school and I was working and doing all of my training. And at one point actually juggled both until eventually I ended up just fully having my practice and sort of eventually just expanded it. So it was, you know, it was difficult really, you know, kind of figuring that out and taking that leap, which is sort of why I kind of do what I do. I work with a lot of women around these sorts of spaces because I feel like everyone's journey is their own. But because I've had that experience, there is something in the space around that shared experience.
Yeah, that's exactly what we hope is that the hard parts of our lives can find purpose and meaning in the ways that we can come alongside others that are going through a similar thing. So to have that come to fruition for you of what you were undergoing personally, but then also finding that career fulfillment and like the melding, that's like the dream, right? Doesn't mean it's easy, but there's so much fulfillment there. Where did you start to feel that paying off? Because I'm sure there were years that you were just like, what am I doing?
Yes. And, you know, there's some moms that can resonate with this, like those like nights where you're like, I can't sleep. And you just keep like thinking about like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
How am I going to do this? And I definitely had those moments. I think what I started to recognize at that time is to, you know, gain my strength, like gain my mentors, speak to other people. It was really helpful for me to like be in therapy, but also to connect with people in similar situations and sort of normalize it.
Mm-hmm.
And just lean into that and kind of recognize an understanding of inner resilience. But I think the other piece that was helpful is in the realize that there's a process, and that sometimes I think as mothers, we want to fix everything, right? So
yes.
We want to like, we see, you know, something going on with the children, want to fix it. So a lot of times we want to hurry up and get there, and it's hard to trust the process. And I had to learn that as well. So that eventually just trusting the process, and you will get there, and it's going to be amazing, and you're going to experience that transformation, but allow yourself to know that it's going to happen in one small mighty step at a time, or one small daily act of courage at a time.
But that's not fun. That's uncomfortable.
It is. It is. It's so uncomfortable. It's like we have to lean into the discomfort. And it is uncomfortable. And so I would say this, there were moments where it was so, you know, where I was exhausted. I was depleted. I felt like I wanted to make sure I was doing things with my son. I was also trying to work and study and all of that. And I realized through, you know, my own inner work, et cetera, and with the help of others, is making sure that we balance out our joy during that time as well, and not to miss out on our own wants and needs and feel like we have to do it all. You know, that superwoman syndrome, and then feeling guilty if we don't.
Right.
That actually it's okay to pause, find things that are joyful, because that's the energy space that you end up projecting out to your kids, even in divorce situations, because those end up being particularly hard where there is a lot of guilt,
right.
around it, you know, about feeling like you have to do more because it's a divorce situation.
Right. So is there a recovery period after divorce that's kind of like expected?
Yeah. So I usually say, like, I describe it as almost like three phases. I say the first phase is whether or not you wanted the divorce, is actually going through the overwhelm and the processing of actually the fact that this divorce is happening, and almost like getting through all of the paperwork and some of that overwhelm and sort of the communication with your children, etc. And then I would say the second phase really ends up being really rebuilding and building your life. For a lot of women that I work with and a lot of moms, sometimes they feel like they might have lost their voice in the marriage. They feel like they've kind of lost their identity and they don't know who they are anymore. Or they feel like it's really scary if it's a divorce they didn't choose. They're kind of wondering, how am I going to do this?
Right.
And so to be patient and tolerant and really just connect into that inner resilience and intuition, knowing that it takes some time, but you'll start to get to know who you are. And always check in with, what do I want and need in this situation? And realize that guilt is not necessarily your friend. That'll only hinder you, not help you, or even help your children. So that's the second phase, is kind of rebuilding. And I would say the third phase really ends up being like, this has happened, and I love seeing my clients get to this point. And it was great, me and my own journey around it, but transforming and finally living their best life. They, you know, realizing what makes them happy, having continue to have that connection and seeing their children thrive and learn, doing something that maybe they love that they might not have ever done before. and realize that 80% good enough as a mom, and that their kids actually appreciate that, and they're modeling that for their children. That their children are going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's really hard to believe, I think, in phase one when you're going through it.
Right. So we don't have to be 100%, only 80%?
80%. Because you know what? There's always that 20% that we need to realize we're not necessarily going to be perfect. Like it's okay to be a little messy and still trying to figure it out sometimes, to be human.
Yeah. There's freedom with that, for sure.
Completely, right? Just what a lift. Yeah. Even just an 80% good enough. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I could do that.
Right. You know? Yeah. What is that, like a C average?
Right? Especially when we see social media and everybody looks so perfect.
Yes. It's
right?
Very
like the mom next door, like how is she doing it? Or everything just seems so perfect. It's like, you know, we're sitting there maybe for some months, like I haven't showered yet, you know?
Yep. And if we can't do that, then we can't get to the place where we are doing all the Pinterest activities and, you know, throwing the party of the year and, you know, all of the things that we put on ourselves as those expectations. That's, we can't do it. That's not feasible.
It is so true. And it can be so liberating to get to a point where you can actually let go of that and realize that if you surround yourself with people who really care and love you and you're starting to create that village of yours, you don't have to worry so much about being so perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have to really think so much about what am I looking at when I'm sort of scrolling down in social media? Maybe I need to disconnect a little bit because it's not so helpful to me. And we all sometimes do it. We have those moments.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like step away from the computer, right?
Yes. Like,
away.
Put down the phone.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we ever get to a place of being so fully enlightened that nothing triggers us. Like we're always going to struggle with some particular thing that is always going to be that like voice in the back of our head saying, you could be doing this better.
Yeah, because we are ever evolving. So we're going to have those moments. So I would say, you know, celebrate the moments that you feel good and joy and you can take a sit back and honor that. Mm-hmm. Because often, as parents, we may look at the stuff that we haven't done, right? The stuff that we have.
Yes.
And there's always going to be that list or that feeling of what we haven't done. So I often say, well, wait a second. Let's pause for a moment and honor. What were some of the things that you did do? And sometimes when we kind of take a step back and do that, it can be a little enlightening and realize how like our inner critics can be so harsh.
Yes. Unreasonably harsh.
Yeah. So, you know, that comes up a lot also, I think, regardless of divorce, we know the inner critic, but also in terms of divorce ends up being pretty powerful, especially if we've been in toxic relationships where we've heard a lot of criticism about either ourselves or being a parent, which does happen sometimes, unfortunately.
Yeah. Are there parts of... like for the clients you work with, I'm sure you see lots of themes that are very similar in how moms are sharing with you their guilt or their feelings of failure. Do they take on parts of their identity that now say that like I wasn't wanted or I'm a, you know, divorcee and that there's stigma attached to that? Like, does that affect who they are, you know, through that journey?
Yes, it does. So in a variety of ways. For some women, you know, culturally, there's a cultural aspect that divorce is such a failure. Mm-hmm. And so it can be very hard in their community and it is sort of can still be experienced as a stigma. So they take that on and they feel like they're failing. For other women, it's also just in the family. You know, divorce doesn't happen in our family. And there's a lot of criticism around that. There's also for women who've been abandoned or left. But maybe there's been infidelity and, you know, their partner has gone in another direction. So much around the self-worth piece, you know, that has to be rebuilt and looked at because there's a feeling of failure, even though like, this isn't about you, but that feeling, right?
Yes.
So there's that piece of it. So there's a lot around that identity-wise around failing and around being so critical. And the other part of it is for some women in the divorce situation, if they've had parents that might have divorced, sometimes they actually have wanted to work that much harder on the marriage, and if it still failed, there's an extra level of failure because they didn't want to be like their parents.
Oh,
and then they're extra hard on themselves.
Yeah.
So you could see like all the difference, all the different kinds of seeming. There are different themes around failure and the roots of those, and then trying to replace those negative thoughts and show some self-compassion.
Yeah. Yeah. So right off the bat, if there are moms listening that are going through their own divorce or have in the past, what is the main takeaway that you feel like they need to hear?
I would say recognize that this is only one part of your story and that there's many chapters to come. You will evolve and create all new experiences that will be positive and healthy, and not to feel like that one story identifies you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really powerful to know. The other part is own your stake in the ground. This isn't, you know, an opportunity. Once, of course, you grieve and go through all of that processing, which is understandable, it's time to own your stake in the ground. This is an opportunity to see who you are and not to be afraid to do the work. Like, you'll get there. It is harder sometimes before it gets easier, but you will get there. Another takeaway is, you know, speaking of doing the work, like recognize maybe where there's your guilt traps, your critic traps, your failure traps. Notice them and try and show yourself some self-compassion. It's so important. In fact, there's so much on self-compassion we can talk about, but I won't dive into that in this one. I would also say is lower the noise, you know, where there's maybe toxic noise around commenting, situations where you feel like you're not accepted, et cetera. Set healthy boundaries. Healthy boundaries are so important in this situation, because when people read boundaries and we allow them to, we are maybe violating something we should be protecting. That's ourselves. Like, it's okay to feel like I am number one me, and raising my child is also number one, et cetera. And then I would also say, if you can, if it's possible, you know, recognize that sometimes co-parenting can be hard, and try to be a little kinder to yourself and seek help where you need it, you know, whether from friends or family, like get the support.
Yeah.
Like, lean into your village.
Yeah. It's okay to ask for help.
It's okay to ask for help from the right people. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Safe people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So those are just some takeaways. I mean, I know there's a lot here. I think the part that I do want to say as a takeaway is really work on trying to diminish that guilt. This is being part of your story of what needed to happen, and that you will navigate all of this with your child, children. And over time, it will end up getting better and easier. The fact that they know that they are loved is important. The fact that their mother is modeling that she's, you know, a human being, and she's also working through things and trying to seek happiness is actually very healthy. It's okay for them to see that.
Yeah. In all circumstances. Yeah.
All circumstances. Exactly.
So I'm sure that one of the biggest fears is, if a family goes through a divorce, are the children irrevocably damaged for life? Like, no hope. Because I'm sure that that's the initial fear.
Yes.
Is that true?
It is not true. It is not true. And for anyone who's listening to this, it is not true. Your kids are not irrevocably damaged for life. In fact, there was actually a really interesting article a while back on how kids who've been through divorce end up being better multitaskers in the workplace.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
Yes. But there is, you know, in fact, my own son wrote about how divorce has created who he is in his college essay.
Oh, wow. Look at him.
So I just wanted to share that personal story. You know, it was very, like, I have to say, like, even now with all the stuff that I'm doing and having my practice, self-disclosure, when he was writing about it, I felt my heart leap, you know? I was like, ooh, okay. But it really turned out to be a very positive story, and he really described his experience around it and who he's become. Wow. So I want to tell all the mothers out there, their kids will not be irrevocably damaged.
Yay. Well, that's a relief.
Yes, it really is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so high stakes. Parenting is so high stakes. We want to do well by our kids. We want to set them up for success as much as possible. We want to instill all the values. We want to teach them all the things. We want to just like set them up, you know, for life, for to have happiness and success and all the things. And so if we feel like we are single-handedly ruining that for them because of our choices, that really does create that immense sense of guilt and maybe even selfishness by saying, well, what I feel like I need is to, you know, seek getting out of this marriage, but then that's to the demise of my child. How can I choose myself over them? You know, I'm sure that there's like a really hard dynamic to navigate there.
Exactly. And I think that is a hard dynamic. And so, you know, I would suggest taking that step back and recognizing if the relationship is also very toxic, that's actually worse for the children to see that, because they're being modeled an unhealthy relationship of two people who may either be constantly arguing or making each other unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, you know, for mothers to keep that in mind in terms of releasing some of that guilt. Mm-hmm. Also, in terms of releasing the guilt to say you're also choosing to leave, you know, kids ultimately, they gain a lot by seeing a happy parent and seeing that a happy parent is that it's okay to choose being happy.
Yeah.
And that maybe that a parent has tried. And so often I might suggest in my collaborative divorce, the messaging is, we love being parents to you, but we're just not good partners to each other. And we've worked and we've tried on it. And we love you and we want to continue to be your parents. And we think we're actually better people and better parents for you by not being together, but we'll always be a family.
Yeah.
And that sometimes that messaging, I think when that's heard, is helpful to take that step back to say, look, it is going to be okay. And eventually that they will be able to move through it. And we do need to make this choice. It's okay to think about me. I'm not doing something wrong.
Hey friend, I see you. You're trying so hard to parent as intentionally and calmly as you can, but you feel like a failure on the daily. You beat yourself up and you ruminate over all the times you lost it on your kids, knowing that's not how you want to be. Maybe your past is creeping up on you, or the stress of life is overtaking you, but it's not okay. You're tired of it. You're tired of all the yelling, dreading time together, and just wanting to get away. You wish you knew how to better get your kids to listen, to stop all the fighting, the aggression, the frustration, but yelling is still the only way you can get their attention, and then beat yourself up for it. Let's stop this cycle altogether. It's possible to enjoy your kids and for them to enjoy being with you. Spoiler alert, they don't like getting yelled at. They don't like getting disciplined all the time. They're tired of it too. If you are ready to admit what you're doing isn't working, let's talk. Schedule a free call to see what's possible for your family. We'll chat about the struggles you're experiencing and decide together if we'd be a good fit to work together. Here's what I know to be true. You are a good mom and you're doing your best. Your kids are good kids, and they are doing their best. If you're still having problems, there's just missing tools, skills, and a disconnect. All things that are fixable. There is so much hope, my friend. Schedule a free call today and set your family's trajectory on a new path starting tomorrow. I can't wait to cheer you on. Yeah. Very, very good perspective. Very wise. So in that same theme, if you're a mom that's currently married, but really struggling and, you know, maybe working on it actively, or, you know, maybe it's a one-sided thing, or you're just really having a lot of doubts. How do you know if divorce is right for your relationship? I mean, is there like a rubric we can check off?
You know, I wish it was that easy, but I do work with a lot of women who come in that really it's about seeking clarity. Mm-hmm. You know, do they stay in the marriage or do they not?
Yeah.
You know, I would say the ones that are more obvious, the ones where there's big red flags, where perhaps they are married to a narcissist. Those are very big issues, you know. Mm-hmm. Or let's say there's infidelity and they're trying to choose, can the marriage survive? And often it does, but there's a lot of building and trust that has to be built. But right. Sometimes it's really as simple as things of, I'm not feeling connected mm-hmm. to my husband. You know, I'm feeling like we're growing in different directions.
Yeah.
We've tried, but I don't feel known, seen, or heard by him. Mm-hmm. I'm recognizing that we don't make each other happy, or there's other things that are happening. So in that sense, I would just say, take a step back and look at, okay, what is coming up for you? How do you recognize who you are showing up in this marriage? And what do you feel outside of this marriage? And do you find yourself wanting to consistently escape from this marriage mm-hmm. and what that might be about?
Yeah.
Are there things that are workable? Are there things that are really deal breakers for you that you feel like you just cannot move through, or that he's not willing to do the work to move mm-hmm. through? Mm-hmm. Did you realize that maybe that there are things that maybe were the wrong decision early on in terms of entering into the marriage? You know, sometimes that happens. Or you're really young, maybe two people meet in high school, and you're not that woman anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or something is taking place where the person you married has kind of done a bait and switch, and that does happen.
Yeah.
And so really look at all of those things, and I would say unpack them. Look at those spaces very clearly, and then say, can I imagine not being this person? Oftentimes I'll even say, if you were sitting here looking at your life, thinking of like your future self, how do you imagine you? What are you doing? What does your life look like? You know, who are you hanging out with? What's taking place in your world? And is he in it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of, it's a whole journey, but these are just some of the things to think about.
Yeah. There's a lot to ponder on there. Good. Thank you. So then with the kids factor, I know you started sharing some of the messaging that you feel like is really powerful to be able to help kids understand. But any other advice with kind of navigating their piece of that puzzle and helping them really understand and, you know, have that felt safety through that transition?
Yes, that's a great question. Because often I'll do family therapy, or I'll end up working with adolescents or teens, even, you know, younger, whose parents are going through divorce individually with them. So I can mm-hmm. share a little insight on things that work and maybe make it difficult. But I see co-parenting is so huge. So two people can really sit down and set aside whatever happened between them and say, how do we end up communicating better? So the first part is, from the onset, have a parenting communication plan in terms of how you're going to tell your kids.
Mm.
Be on the same page with it and do it together, even if it's difficult, you know, it's a difficult and non-amicable one, if you can try and do that.
Yeah.
Let the kids know that they're supported, that there's going to be some consistency in their life, even though there's going to be a big change. So as much as the child is aware that they, you know, that they still have two parents, and maybe there's activities that they'll continue to do, their friends won't change. It might seem like small details, but these are important. Maybe they'll go to the same school. Sometimes that doesn't happen. So as long as you can try and have other things that are consistent.
Yeah.
I would then say, recognize that the back and forth into two different homes can be a little challenging. That doesn't mean that the divorce shouldn't happen. Kids do end up being very malleable. But if we can have certain things, like stuff in both homes that are similar, like not wondering how to like navigate one thing to another home, mm-hmm. especially when they're younger,
yeah,
do that. I would say try not to pin themselves against parent, don't have them take sides. You know, we can feel really, really angry, and I would just suggest process that elsewhere, you know, because that's a big burden for them to hold.
Yeah.
Every child wants to feel like they can love the other parent and not feel guilty.
Mm.
The other part of it is maybe just have that quality of time with them and to feel like even if there's visitation, it's the quality of time, not to feel like if they aren't with you all the time. Let them enjoy and have that space with dad and then come back to you, share it, and enjoy that space with you. That can be very healthy for them.
Yeah.
And for moms, when they have that downtime, take it. Don't feel guilty that you should feel bad. You know, live your life, take care of what you need to replenish, because they'll be back and you'll be back doing mom. And that's mm-hmm. actually good for them too. The other part is sometimes with divorce, kids actually like discipline. They kind of still want to feel like mom's still mom and dad's still that dad. So don't feel like you have to enable anything. You can show them compassion, but it's okay. They appreciate structure.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just mm-hmm. some gems. And there's more there, but hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah, very helpful. So more on that dynamic of different houses, different rules. How do you set up expectations for, let's say, you know, the mom herself that helps her feel okay with not being able to control the environment that, you know, their kids are going to?
Yeah. I'm going to say three words and it seems so simple. And then I'm going to backtrack and say other options. But the first one is let it go.
Mm.
You know how hard that is. It is so hard. I know myself. However, sometimes there's some situations that are just not going to be negotiable. Dad is going to want to do things a certain way in his household, just as mom is. So if we can find some things that are the same, great. Try and have that conversation. For mm-hmm. example, you know, it's hard if there's going to be one household where bedtime is like midnight and another where it's, you know, 9 p.m.
Yeah.
So you try and be on the same page, but sometimes you just won't be able to. So I would say, like, really just try and let that go. It's okay to be able to communicate to your kids. Look, I know it's hard to have different sets of rules, like acknowledge it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the ones that we're doing here, but I want to hear your opinion. Like, let them talk about it. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are things as they're older that they'll just establish their rules themselves when they go to be with their dad, etc., because they're older, so they can start to like incorporate what they want, show some independence. Maybe mom needs to think about, well, are those rules something that I can live with? Like, what are the things that are okay for me to live with? Sometimes, for example, video games becomes a bone of contention where one household allows more of it than another.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in this situation, in fact, with moms that I work with, we talk about, it's okay to have your rhythm and you can even put your schedule up and say, this is video game time. And maybe dad doesn't do that. Or maybe dad's doing that and mom doesn't want to do that. So mm-hmm. allow yourself to say, there's going to end up being situations where I may need to be flexible, but I can also hold my own in terms of this is how I want to run my household and not to feel guilty about it.
Yeah. I think there becomes a lot of that breakdown in maybe the structure or the discipline that you may have had prior to the divorce because you're struggling with that guilt and feeling like, well, if I took this healthy family model away from my kids, then I need to make up for it by letting them stay up or letting them play all the video games they want or letting them, you know, do the things that they want to do because that makes me feel better that I'm, you know, helping them get through this and be happier through this time. But like you said, what I know about child development is they thrive off of consistency. And even if they don't to your face say, like, thank you for turning off video games at 9 p.m. Subconsciously, they are saying thank you because they want to know where those guardrails are and they want to know that they're still there. They don't want to feel like there's just all of a sudden no rules because that actually feels scary.
Exactly. Because you think about it, even as adults, we still like to have consistency and structure. It helps us feel grounded and not sit in uncertainty. So they kind of want to know that mom's the same. Or even, you know, not to let go of things you would encourage otherwise. So here's an example where maybe, you know, child doesn't want to go to like a particular event or gathering, let's say, and or it's do something outdoors. They'd rather just sit indoors. And mom might feel guilty because of the divorce to encourage, you know, let's go outdoors. Let's take a walk. Let's play ball or do something. And sometimes if you encourage that and sort of encourage your child to do it, you may be surprised that they actually like it, even though it might seem like they're grudgingly doing it. Mm-hmm. So if you would do it anyway, it's okay to still do it. Like if you would do this in healthy modeling, you can still model that otherwise and not feel like you have to kind of like make up for the divorce, basically.
It's also yeah. What you're saying. Yep. Exactly. And then for dating, do you need to like put that off until everyone's done with college?
I would say no, but I think okay. Everybody has their own journey. So, you know, often I always say, is like, do you feel like you've dated yourself enough? Because we repeat what we don't prepare.
Ooh.
We haven't looked at ourselves throughout this journey, right? Of divorce and who we are and kind of figuring all of that out. And we start to date. How are we showing up? And are we really sort of dating, you know, a different version of who we were previously married to? Because we're just sort of repeating what we were doing and not noticing it. So I'd say first, like, get an understanding of yourself. And if you feel comfortable with that, and also dated yourself. Like, have you picked yourself up and sort of like said, it's like date night for me. I'm watching a movie and I'm going to, I don't know, pour myself a glass of wine or a cup of tea and, you know, whatever your choice is and do that. And really feel comfortable in that. So you're comfortable in your own skin with whoever you're dating. I'd say the other part is, should you really want to? Because for some women, they have been working on themselves in the marriage, right? Then they decide that this is the right decision, right? So they're kind of working on and realizing the clarity and they're ready. They actually want to go out there. Then I would just say with whoever it is that you're dating, like be clear, like where you are. So, you know, I am a mother. This is, you know, I have kids. You know, these are my responsibilities, that kind of thing. Be clear on who you are and where you are. Maybe it's like, I just want to have fun. That's fine too. But make sure that whoever you're going to have this date with, that you're recognizing, like, where are you landing around it? You know, do you have a goal around this? Or do you really just want to enjoy someone's company and be honest with yourself and allow yourself to be honest in that dating process? Of course, not on the first date or anything. Because that person runs in the other direction.
Put that all in your bio. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And then I would just say sometimes you can, you know, you can't pick and choose. Like, you know, remember your own worth. You know, that can be a little challenging, especially right on the dating apps and the swipe left and right and everything, you know, for women to feel like, you know, oh, it's been crickets right now. And, oh, someone swiped. Well, doesn't mean you have to jump for it. Like, remember, you do have something to offer.
Yeah.
And last but not least, you can give yourself permission to date and meet your needs. It doesn't mean you are not a good mother.
Yes, I'm sure some moms need to hear that. Good. And then let's say you do find a new, you know, a mate and they have kids of their own. What advice do you have for blending families where, you know, you have all sorts of dynamics now to kind of navigate?
Yes. And I resonate with this one, my own current experience. So with blended families, I think what is important is one, you know, take your time to blend. Allow yourself to be, for each, you know, partner in the situation, to be able to communicate and be open to the feelings of both sets of, you know, kids. I would also suggest that have communication open and recognize that you're blending and you're all sort of this joint family now, but it's also okay for you to still have your individual relationship with your own child or children, and for him to have his individual relationship with his own child or children. That does not mean that we don't want to still talk about what are our cohesive rules, because now you're merging and integrating. So if you're going to have one set of kids with one set of rules and one with another, it can be really confusing. So you may want to really sit down with this person that you're blending with and really keep that communication and talk about how do we want to be parents to our kids, to each other, and with each other as a blended family? What do we want that to look like? And then share that with your kids.
Yeah. So you probably need more intentional like family meetings and clear communication, and these are the rules in this house and that type of a thing to be able to really help communicate that clearly.
Exactly. And I think the other part is every blended family is different. So, you know, check in on, for some, the kids are very involved with biological dad. So they appreciate, you know, mom's partner, you know, and like him or care for him, but it doesn't mean he has to play role of father. And in other situations, there is more role of father. So I think something, just noticing that or being clear on that or understanding that kind of can be helpful, because it can help with regard to sometimes expectations on either side.
Right. Yep. One more question, and then I'll get to the last one that I have for everybody. But with being in a relationship with a narcissist, I think it would be helpful to kind of define what that looks like, because I have been a friend to two families actually that went through a divorce, and they, like, I was kind of with them through the process of recognizing that's who they were in a relationship with, and the way that they felt manipulated, the way that they felt like they were the crazy one, you know, not really having a lot of clarity on whose fault was what and what they should even do. I think there's just a lot of confusion that maybe a mom can, you know, take some of this advice and actually see something for what it is for the first time. So just some perspective as to what are the qualities that makes these relationships so toxic, and how do you figure out if you're in a relationship with one?
This is so important, and I'm really glad that, you know, this is coming up here. So toxic. So, you know, are you with a narcissist? Are you married to a narcissist? Are you dating a narcissist? Mm-hmm. I mean, the first part is, how much space does this person take up? Meaning, is there grandiosity? Is it always about them? Do they need to be the center of attention? Second thing, is it only their voice that matters? So do they not recognize your subjective experience? Do you not feel heard or understood? Is there empathy or non-empathy? So for narcissists, there is no empathy. They do not understand your pain. In fact, they might even belittle you or criticize you. Another red flag is their constant criticism. Are you consistently feeling not good enough? Are you feeling disempowered? Another red flag, the power dynamics. Do they always want to be in control, whether it's emotionally or even in physical intimacy? Do they feel like they're not ever getting enough from you? Are you never good enough, whether emotionally or physical intimacy? Do you find yourself constantly accommodating and giving in, meaning a codependent relationship has been created where you are constantly the caregiver, and that's just the way it is, that there's no room for you to actually take a stand or feel like you actually have opinions, or you don't need to be the one that's always holding the emotional space for this person? Are there narcissistic rages or injuries, meaning that everything, if you say something, and it's not even something that's harsh, that the person goes into a rage, that they can't handle it or cope with it? Is their experience, like you said, you're the one that's crazy? In fact, I think you're the narcissist. You know, that comes up a lot when someone say to me, they're telling me I'm the narcissist. That's a big sign. Where they may be even unwilling to work on the marriage. They might be saying, really, it's all your fault. You know, if you did this, it's conditional. If you did this, then it would be better. you did this, 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 I would be happy and we would be okay. That's a big one to question. Am I with a narcissist? That's not healthy. Does the person believe boundaries? Do you feel unable to actually have somewhat of a life? It is okay as a mom to feel like you can socialize. He can be with the kids or you can get a sitter, that you can do things. Are you made to feel like you can't? Are you seen as being a bad mother? Are you criticized constantly for your parenting?
Yeah.
So there's a lot there. Those are some major red flags. Often what happens is people enter into these relationships where they might date someone because there's a lot of love bombing, which is, you know, someone is sort of full speed ahead. You are amazing. You're beautiful. You're the ideal woman. And they say all of these things and they want to keep, you know, they sort of love bomb you. And you take all of that in. And if you've experienced, let's say you've experienced divorce, it's a dating situation, this may just be like incredible.
Right.
But you have to be careful of that. That actually is full speed ahead. Love bombing actually isn't healthy. So you have to be mindful that, or in a marriage, it may have started off this way. And suddenly, when he no longer feels idealized, when you actually are a real human being with opinions, he no longer is happy. And all of a sudden, the mask comes off, the narcissistic mask, and you start to see his colors. So that's just some of those, you know, areas to be mindful of, to think about.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a topic that's not talked about enough in a healthy way of being able to identify and call it out. So I really appreciate your expertise in being able to throw out some of those red flags, because then moms can be more equipped to manage these relationships in the healthiest way.
Yeah,
absolutely. So the last question that I love to ask every guest that comes on is, how are you the mom that your son needs?
Okay, that's a good one. You know, there's two things that I would say. One is, I feel like I'm the mom that my son needs by letting him be who he is, like allowing him to recognize that he can sort of find his happiness, find his voice, recognize his joys, knowing that there might be sorrows or trials and tribulations, and just being very present with him. I realize that now, look, it's a learning curve, but not trying to fix everything that he'll also figure it out. But he knows that I'm always there to come back to. The nest is always there, but he's flying. So I'm letting him fly. And the other thing that I would say, and I think this would pertain to kind of being the best mom that I can be, but maybe generally, is it's a Ram Dass quote that says, we're all just walking each other home.
I love that.
And yes. So keep that in mind for yourself and even with, you know, your kids.
Yeah.
We're learning from each other.
Yes. I love that. Thank you so much for, like, that was a super, super quick question bomb of an hour of so much advice and insight. So I really, really, really appreciate your time. You shared so much with us. I can't thank you enough.
Oh, thank you so much, Danielle. It was such a pleasure to be here. And, you know, I look forward to us connecting again.
Yes, absolutely.
Whether you've experienced divorce or not, I hope you gleaned fresh perspective from all of the advice Babita shared. You are not failing. You can find more ways to connect with Babita in the show notes. Always remember, you are the mom that your kids need. Next episode, you'll get to hear from Libby Brewster, who shares her 4 wildly different birth stories and wants you to know that your identity and your worth are not defined by yours. Are you sick of arguing with your spouse about discipline? Are you sick of beating yourself up for yelling? I can help. Coaching allows us the opportunity to talk through everything, problem solve solutions, and provide the support and accountability for you to make the changes and see the changes. Go to parentingwholeheartedly.com/coaching to learn more and schedule a free call today. Thanks for coming on this journey with me. I believe in you. And I'm cheering you on.